conversation? This is William Stein. We'll talk about Sage.
Hello. So, thank you for introducing me. So I'm going to tell you about Sage, which is some new software that I've been involved in writing. It runs on a lot of different computers. It's free. It doesn't run on my watch, unfortunately, but it does run on Windows, Linux, and OS X.
You need a new watch.
Yeah. I got much better. So the purpose of this talk is to answer two questions. One, what is Sage? And two, show me some examples of using Sage, hopefully in the context of number theory. I noticed that the talks were somehow labeled Shafravich Tate groups, BSD, and so on. So I'll give some examples that involve these objects. But first, what is Sage? So about at an AMS meeting about a year and a half ago, I started writing some software for mathematics computation as kind of an alternative to Magma because I thought I wanted a little more flexibility than I got in Magma. And Sage is what has evolved out of that. I wrote a lot at the beginning, but now development has sort of mushroomed, and there are people all over the world sending me code, and now I'm getting completely overwhelmed by the influx of new code. In any case, it's completely free and open source, so I'm not trying to sell you anything.
T-shirts.
Except maybe T-shirts. History covered cost. So here's a Sage T-shirt. Sage is a new computer algebra system, but unlike many of the computer algebra systems you're familiar with, it doesn't have its own special purpose custom language. So if you look at, say, Macaulay or Magma, they all have their own language. Sage doesn't have its own language. The language is just Python. The third thing that Sage is a new way to use software that you already have together. So if you have written a lot of code in, say, Magma, and you'd still like to be able to use it because it was a huge amount of work to write, it's still possible to use it from Sage, but you must have Magma on your computer. And the same statement holds from Mathematica and Maple and many other systems. Also, if there's some program you want to write and it works best by combining together, say, some special purpose package for competing with Polytopes and Paris, then Sage is the right framework in which to do this. All right, so now I'm going to address the first point, open source. And I'm just going to read a quote of Nabucer, who started the computer algebra system GAP in 1986. And here's what he says. And it says, you can read Seelow's theorem and its proof in Hubert's book in the library. Then you can use Seelow's theorem for the rest of your life free of charge. You don't have to pay, you know, regular yearly license fees to use Seelow's theorem, like with computer software. But for many computer algebra systems, license fees have to be paid regularly. You press buttons and you get answers. This is addressing the open source versus closed source aspect. You press buttons and you get answers in the same way as you get the bright pictures from your television set, but you cannot control how they were made in either case. With this situation, two of the most basic rules of conduct in mathematics are violated. In mathematics, information is passed on free of charge, and everything is laid open for checking. Not applying these rules to computer algebra systems that were made for mathematical research means moving in a most undesirable direction. Most important, can we expect somebody to believe a result of a program that he is not allowed to see? So I didn't write this quote. Somebody else's idea, but I do tend to agree with it to some extent. I got frustrated with refereeing papers, and every paper I referee has, almost every paper has a calculation or some table. In fact, maybe it's just because of who I am, but I constantly get sent papers by editors that ask me to referee something. It has a calculation dealt with some software I don't have access to, or some version of software I don't have access to. It's not freely available. I can't look at the source code. It's just weird as a referee. Not only that, most of the papers I write have that property, because they very frequently have tables in them that I computed using Magma, and the referee maybe doesn't have access to Magma. A lot of the readers won't have, you know, maybe you pay $2,000 a year for a journal subscription, you still don't have Magma. So it's just something a little bit frustrating about this situation. So here's a very quick overview of what's in Sage. This is just a list of directories. This addresses the second point. Sage is a new computer algebra system. There's around 60,000 lines of unique code, and there's a whole bunch of different things. It's not just a number theory system. You can see directories here for databases and matrix algebra and working with basic rings, schemes, and all kinds of different things. Also, here's a little interesting thing. With Sage, there are lots of examples in the documentation, and right now there are 6,845 lines of input for examples, and they're all automatically tested, and you get to see that the output of the examples agrees with the claimed output. So that's something that's done on a regular basis. All right, so I was talking to Michael Stoll a long time ago when I was really excited about computation as a grad student, and he was very excited about Magma because in Magma you could sort of do everything under one roof. So before number theorists at least got into using Magma a lot, I think you'd use Perry for some part of your calculation, and you switch to use genus 2 reduction for another part, and so on. You kind of mix everything together using shell scripts and lots of text files. And Michael's very excited that you could do everything in just one computer algebra system. And in fact, I'd written a paper with him and like five other people on BSD for genus 2 curves, and we did use a whole bunch of different packages. This was all pre-Magma. And we sort of mixed and matched. So he was very happy about that. Sage takes that into account. And in Sage, what you have is interfaces to all the systems that are listed here. So if you're using Sage, you can, and you have, well, the blue ones come with Sage, and the black ones, if you have them installed in your computer, you can use them from Sage. You can type commands and they get executed using these. And in some cases, there are functions in Sage that are implemented, not by default, but if you want, using some Magma or something else. So Sage provides an environment which you can use open source stuff under one hood. But there's a lot of open source things out there. There's a range from very general purpose systems like Maxima, which is an old symbolic manipulation system, kind of like Mathematica or Maple, but before Mathematica and Maple. But it's actually now a free open source GPL program. But there's also specialized programs that a lot of people in here are familiar with, like MWRank or Genus 2 Reduction, or SimPow is a new program with Mark Watkins. Dachshund-Servo and neat stuff for computing L functions. These are all specialized programs, and these are all included with Sage. So when you have Sage, you just define an elliptic curve, and you can start calling functions on it that happen to be implemented using Rubinstein's L calculator, or Dachshund-Servo, or Mark Watkins' SimPal. And I'll show you that in just a second. So the quick answer to what is Sage is it's a way of putting together a whole bunch of open source software with a whole bunch of new software that I'm writing with a number of other people, such as David Joyner, David Cole, Kiran Kedlaya, who's sitting back there and has another Sage t-shirt on, a number of undergrads, a whole bunch of people in Germany, a couple of people in Germany and elsewhere in Europe who I've never met in person, et cetera, et cetera. Just a little background. So there are a lot of possible languages in which you can write software, and the one that much of Sage is written in is Python. The main reason is because Python is a very mainstream language, and at the same time, it's pretty similar to Magma. So I like the Magma language in some ways a lot, and because Python's similar, I was sort of attracted to it. It's also excellent as a gluing language. It's a language that from the ground up, it's designed to be really easy to interface with other libraries and other systems. Also, since it's a mainstream language, there's a huge range of libraries available. There's, for example, a really popular library for doing 3D video games. So you can just install it on your system. If you wrote a computer algebra system and it used Python, then you could just grab this other thing, Pygame, and do some cool 3D visualization that involves your mathematical, you know, the calculations you did. Maybe you could fly through your Mills's tables of rational points and curves. I'm giving a talk on So I'm giving it. There's a video game programming university in Redmond called DigiPin, and I'm giving a talk there the Tuesday after next, and it's specifically going to be about this. You know, take some like abstract math research and then interact with it from a video game-ish point of view. So I'm going to see if I can get any students interested in this. Another nice thing, which I'll demo in a second, one thing is the source code of Python programs just tends to be easy to read. I just know this, I found it to be the case, and I've written a ton of code, and people just look at it and can really understand it and modify it and then give me patches, which is was not at all the case with any C++ code I ever wrote, or Magma code for that matter. But with Python code, I've been very surprised to get really non-trivial patches to the code I wrote. For example, this guy in Germany, Martin Albrecht, last week he suggested reorganizing the code for multivariate polynomial rings so that the interface to Singular, its location was much more sensible. And then we discussed the design. A few hours later, he sent me a patch, and it was a substantial reorganization of some of the code in Sage. So it showed he could really understand it. Also, there's something called IPython, which is an extremely nice interactive shell for working with Python. So that's almost all the background. One last slide about background. There's a language that's very similar to Python called Pyrex. It's compiled, and what happens is you write code in Pyrex. It looks like you're writing code in Python, except there are a few additional keywords. And you run it through a compiler, it gets converted to C code, and then you can compile it with your favorite C compiler, which could be GCC, or it could be one of Intel C compilers or whatever. So when you have something that needs to be fast, such as computing the reduced row echelon form of a matrix over a finite field, and you want to write it from scratch for some reason because that hasn't been done well, say, in what's already available, you can do it in Pyrex and get something that would be just as fast as if you wrote it directly in C. So you get but it interacts very nicely with Python. So it's actually an utterly crucial thing if you're going to write something like Sage and have it be fast. For example, there's a group in Japan who, I guess, they're the successors for ZMath called NZMath, and they're trying to write a huge number theory library in Python, but they are using only Python. They aren't using any compiled language, and the result is somewhat slow, to be very kind, unfortunately. But that said, they have a very nice license, and I and other people working on Sage have benefited a lot from looking at their source code, because they figure out how to do things, and you could just take what they did and then put it in a compiled system and you've benefited. So I don't want to knock NZMath. It's just, okay. So now I'm just going to show you examples. So here's an example, and I think I'm going to switch to a console and type, I'm going to load it. So what the first line does is it makes an elliptic curve, and Sage comes with Pomona's database. By default, it comes with the curves up to conductor 10,000, but you can type one command, and it will automatically download and install the database up to conductor 120,000, which is what's there. And it's really the whole database, not just the equations, but you get all the information John has computed about these curves. So, for example, IFT, who's on the left, has used this database to systematically run through and do various calculations about elliptic curves. There's a command analytic rank, and zero, SHA-N. So how are these things implemented? They're a combination of Python code and actually Perry C library code in this particular case. So I should sort of just twirl around. You see on the back of my t-shirt, very small, there's a lot of different software listed. Sage, what is it? If you go to the Sage website, there's a 50 megabyte tarball. You can download it and type extract and then make, and then sit there for 30 minutes or maybe an hour, depending on your computer. And at the end, you have a custom-built version of Perry, Gap, Singular, and a whole bunch of other software all working in a local directory on your system. So Sage, it's not at all about reinventing the wheel and trying to pull stuff in from other systems and putting it into the context of Sage. So if you look at, say, Maxima Magma or Perry, they see something they want to be in their system, they rewrite it in the context of their system. Sage doesn't do that at all. It simply takes it looks at the code, it says, geez, these guys are mathematicians, they forgot to license their code, which is the case with most mathematicians who make public code available. Then I write them an email and convince them to release their code into the GPL, and then it gets put into Sage. And I've done this about 5 times now. And each time I tell the person about all the other people that have, all their famous friends who have released their code in the GPL, and then it becomes even more likely, or a freer license. So, okay, here's a fun command that you won't find in any other computer algebra systems. Given an elliptic curve, it will list the primes P, which the mod P representation is not surjective, and it will tell you why. It's the sort of thing you often want to do, and the way the command is implemented, I'll show you in another system how you can find out what it's actually doing. You just make an elliptic curve, and let's see, here's another curve, 11a. So you just say e.non-surjective. First, we can run it for fun. Again, see, 5, it has 5 torsion, surjective everywhere else. If you say question mark, it will tell you, let me shrink the screen a little. Oops. Alt, nice. option one. Sorry, not too awful sophisticated yet. Okay, so it gives it tells you exactly what it's doing. So it's a list of primes which there's some possibility that it's not surjective. Anything not in that list, it's definitely surjective. If it's in the list, then there's some it's very likely that it's not surjective, incredibly likely. And moreover, there's a reason, and in many cases, the reason really tells you that it's not surjective, like rational torsion. And you can go down, and there's tells you how it works. There's always, in most cases, there's a bunch of examples that you can just paste in and try that illustrate the program. And then there's a discussion of the algorithm. And it's a combination of Lena Kojikaru's paper and some work of Bill Duke and Sarah's paper. So you put all that together, you talk to Grigor Grigorov and Richard Taylor for a few minutes, and you figure out how to do this calculation in a finite amount of time. And the implementation that I wrote based on this is... So if you, oh, by the way, if you say double, if you have a function and you say double question mark, it gives you the source code. And there's the source. I don't know how. Yeah, it's pretty readable. So there's the source code. So there are a couple of special cases. For CM, the situation is very well understood. It isn't surjective, but it's as surjective as possible away from the primes that divide the conductor. You can see a paper of Rubin about this. I mean, where he remarks about this. If it's semi-stable, then there's a better bound. In general, here's the bound that's in your paper, Elena. Yeah. So you check explicitly what's going on up to this bound, and then after that bound, you don't have to do anything. You can look at the code. So it's nice that you can look at the code. You know, it increases your confidence, maybe, that this is right, because you can actually read through and see exactly what it's doing. If you want to throw some print statements in or trace through it, you can. That's the way you should be able to use computer algebra systems to do calculations like this, I think. It's better. Okay, some more examples. Here's another command. Given an elliptic curve, by the way, the way it works in Python... or IPython, is you have an object and you call a function on it. This is like in Java or C++ or whatever. You say e dot, it's always dot, there's no greener arrows or anything. Then you give a function name of what you want to pass it. Okay, so let me just run through some more examples. This lists all the first 10 Huebner discriminants. This computes the Huebner index for minus 20 using the Gross-Zagier formula. And the result is an interval in the sense of interval arithmetic. You can do arithmetic with it, like square it and add 10. So there's some support for interval arithmetic. Here's another example. Tim Dotchitzer, Tim wrote a program for computing L functions. It's really fun. You can just plug in any number you want, and you get out the L function. It's fun. I don't know. I'm not quite sure how useful it is, but it's fun. And see how easy, you don't have to worry about trying to install this program, figuring out how to use it. It's just there. But Mike Rubenstein wrote a really amazing program for computing zeros of L functions, in particular the Riemann zeta function, elliptic curve L functions. These are the first 5 zeros of the L function of the elliptic curve along the critical strip. So they're, these are the imaginary parts of the zeros. So it's fun that you can just plug it in, you don't have to know much more. Mark Watkins wrote a program for symmetric power L functions. It's included with SAGE. That's SIM2 evaluated at, I think, the central critical value. So, and you can do a whole bunch of other symmetric powers without having to know very much. Taking the L function and evaluating it along a line taking image. Yes.
Watkins program
seems to give
it.
It's just a not implemented error. I haven't carefully. It returns a string, and in most cases, I would convert that string into a Python real, and I haven't got around to it because I just put SimPow in when I saw Mark at the Arizona Winter School. So it's a string. You could convert it into a real number if you wanted to, just using a single command. But basically, it's there's a lot of not finished issues.
Can you
and that's an example.
Symmetric power.
Yeah, that's in there.
Some comment they put there.
Yeah, there's another function that I'm almost out of time, so I can't say too much. But there's another function simpal. So you just do tab completion. You know, you want to know what commands you can do on an elliptic curve. You say e dot tab, and you get a list of all of them. And scroll through. You want ones that involve L series, so you get you do this. You want one that involves simpal. SimPal derivatives, there it is. There's examples. And it's an amazing program. Mark Watkins spent years refining, and it's just a part of SAGE now. So there's another example. I'm almost out of time, but that computed a picture of... it's a line. It's what happens when you take the image of the L function elliptic curve from 0 up to 10, and you go pretty neat. It keeps going. You keep getting new zeros as you reach the zeros. So now we can draw cool pictures like the dynamical systems people. Here's another one. Think how much grant money we can get. Look at that. I mean, that's it. That's an L series of my favorite elliptic curve, order of vanishing 2, which is S equal to 1. So isn't that neat? You might not have seen that before. Why not? So, the sort of thing you should be able to just draw. Here's some other examples of calculations. Denise Simone has an algebraic 2 descent program. It's in Sage. You can use it. There's point counting due to 2 French people. So you can compute the number of points on an elliptic curve. See, it's close to P. Haas is right. And you can save and load individual objects. That's what this example indicates. I make a space of modular symbols. Modular symbols are in Sage, but they're not as fast as they need to be. You can decompose the space. You can save an individual object, quit, copy that object to another computer, whatever, load that object back in, and work with it, which is very nice. So it's easy to make big tables of data. And finally, this is my last slide, really, of examples. Sage is not only for number theory. I mean, I initially thought it would be for number theory, but there's a lot more people out there than just number theorists, especially good coders who are interested in submitting things. And I mean, there are these people who put in a lot of time to make some really nice stuff, and they're not number theorists, but they'll greatly improve the commutative algebra and so on. So I'm benefiting greatly from this. But here's just an example. So I make a polynomial ring, make a scheme, compute something about the number of irreducible components. That's implemented using singular. Here it computes the Grubner-Fan of that finite ideal of the twisted cubic. And Grubner-Fan is something that computes the Grubner-Fan, which is a fan, which is a type of polytope associated to a Grubner basis. And I guess computing with them and working with them is really important in the area of tropical geometry. And it's really big at the University of Washington, so I've been talking with grad students there about this. So a grad student there helped me design something. So Grubner-Fan's now included with Sage. Here's something. I was talking to Jason, who's right there in the back. He's a student of Bernd Sturmfels at Berkeley. So yesterday, we worked on designing an interface to something called PolyMake, which is for computing with polytopes. So this is an example where you compute the Newton polytope of the twisted cubic, or I guess something silly. I took the product of the generators for the ideal corresponding to the twisted cubic, and then I compute the facets of the Newton polytope. So I'm starting to discover that I'm not just a number theorist anymore, because I'm really interested suddenly in polytopes and stuff, just because, I mean, there are these other objects attached to the things I'm interested in. So my interests are greatly broadening. In any case, the final slide, does Sage have a future? First, if nobody submits any more code to Sage, I still constantly work on it. So as long as I'm alive, Sage will be alive. But I found that people all over the world can just read the code and start understanding what's going on pretty quickly, especially with the documentation that we put up. So I think even if I were hit by a bus tomorrow, Sage would continue. There's going to be a workshop in August this year at MSRI, and it's going to be on computing with modular forms with Sage. And I hope a lot will come out of that. There'll be another workshop. This was the first Sage Days workshop. You can see some of the people in this room are in that picture. That's going to be in Seattle in October. UW gave me extremely generous startup money to hire a bunch of undergrads to work on Sage, so I'm pretty happy about that. So Sage will have support for the next couple of years that way. And the thing with Sage is that, you know how with some systems there's the developers and the users. With Sage, everybody's a developer. The system you get when you install it is exactly what the system I work in. It's very easy to submit code back to me. When you write something, just put it right into the system and send it back to me, and it will get stuck into Sage. So I want everybody in the world who uses Sage to be one of the Sage developers. Okay, so that's the end of my talk. I wish I could tell you a lot more, but I don't have time. Thank you very much. Yes?
So I have a question about the last thing you said, actually. I mean, what's the quality control mechanism for code that, I mean, for instance, you probably wouldn't want
there's a mailing
to write and send you.
Okay, I've got some really bad code. I rewrite it often. But really, often the hard part in writing code is figuring out how to do something. So first, there's a huge amount of attribution in Sage. So when you look at a function, as much as possible, it says who implemented it. unlike some systems where, you know, it's kind of hidden. If you write something, you get credit for it. On the other hand, you get credit for it. Okay, so I mean, if you use a function in a paper and you're, I mean, if you use a function from Sage in a paper, you should look at the documentation for the function. Function name question mark. You'll see who wrote it. You can thank that person or not if it turns out. But also, there's a mailing list that a lot of people subscribe to, and the patches are posted there usually, so other people can try them out. The example, I want people to have lots of examples in the code they submit. That's explained. But yeah, quality control is a huge issue. And but basically, I try to read everything that I get. And then usually what happens is somebody sends me a patch, I include the patch, then I read the patch, and then I make a number of changes and additions of documentation, then I make a new patch over it, which says, you know, this is the original one, and this is the changes I made to it. So any other questions or comments?
Tell people how to get t-shirts.
Come to the next Sage Days. There'll be another t-shirt for the next one. I mean, I have about 8 of these left, but I've probably worn them all, so. So if you want a pre-worn one, I have a discount. Goodwill. Okay, so thank you.
Okay, we can now get 4 hours off.
How flexible is the installation process? Like, you have it set up for people who don't know what they're doing, but say somebody already has Query or is comfortable, say, with a Gen 2 learning system and they want to be all custom. Is it set up to be flexible, or could it be extended to be flexible?
Yeah, you can easily tell it not to build any given package by just touching one file.
Okay.
So, yeah, so you can just take any subset of the package and just say, don't build that, use the one that's system-wide. That said, I don't recommend that for Query, for example, because I attach the Query C library specifically to make it better for use with C.
Okay.
Because, for example, Query, if it encounters an error, it just calls exit in certain cases, which is bad. I want it to call abort, and then I want to trap abort. And so that's why I modify the exits to aborts and so on.
Are they interested in incorporating that?
Yeah, and they will. It just hasn't.
Yeah.
The Sage release cycle is much more.
Sure.
I mean, Query releases maybe a stable version every year or two. So, you know, Sage has only been around a year and a half.
And with Python, it's pretty plug-ins almost, where you don't need, you can almost plug in new code, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, new interface,
and you can change a class using mixons as much as you want, as long as it's not a built-in compiled class. Yeah.
That sounds good. Oh, thanks.
This is good.
Oh, no, but I
feel like this is good.
No, yeah. This is a don't type of
function.
Yeah. Have a, yeah, have a student done.
I think I'm going to get
come shop,
no,
but
I,
he applied, but don't know what else he's going to do besides the department.
He should have been contacted like 2 weeks ago, but Hugo Rossi told me that he's been completely swamped with some crazy workshop that's going on. And he hasn't sent out the acceptances yet. But he told me he was supposed to do it on Friday. I don't know if he did. If when you get back, the student still hasn't heard something, tell him to email me.
Okay.
Email me.
Exactly.
Nice meeting you.
Nice meeting you.
Yeah. So, are you at UW?
Yes, I'm at UW.
Have you ever interfaced with Don Marshall's conformal mapping stuff?
No, what's the name of
it? So, I don't actually know that much about either, but there's this Fortran program.
Why is it
a mapping program? It's
kind of a lame issue. I find it's a all this kind of very difficult type stuff. It's very difficult to do when I'm like,
yeah, if you just want to know, like, these are very
so his name is Don Marshall, okay, and he's a professor at UW. I've only been at UW for 3 weeks. I just got hired there, like, from San Diego in the middle of the year.